Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back on the show Dr. Bruce Goldberg, and we will be discussing his book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, Parallel Universes, Teleportation, and Out-of-Body Travel. A few weeks ago, we talked about some of these topics but didn't get through all of them, and due to a cancellation at the last minute by one of our other authors, Dr. Goldberg has graciously offered to step in so we can finish talking about what we didn't get to in the previous session. Anyway, Dr. Goldberg, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to reincarnate with your fine show.
Right.
Yeah, today we're going to talk about some of the details of the fifth dimension and actually techniques and recommendations of how people can actually do very safely and very repeatedly and with control, leave the body, come explore the fifth dimension, and see what this is all about.
That would be great. Would you like to talk a little bit about the dimensions and what they are?
Sure. First, again, as I did last time, I want to make an offer for your audience. If they order my Exploring the Fifth Dimension from my website and mention this show, I will include with the book a free CD, which is titled Fifth Dimension Travel, so they can actually, it's a self-hypnosis CD which will actually guide them out of the body into the fifth dimension and allow them to explore and actually perceive the all the things that we're talking about and that they would read about in the book. So if they, but they have to mention the show to do that and the offer. And the website is DR, that's D as in David, R as in Robert, and then you spell my name, BruceGoldberg.com. That's B-R-U-C-E. G-O-L-D-B-E-R-G.com. Now, as far as the fifth dimension, what we have, these are different dimensions or planes, as they're called, and this has been reported all throughout history. My research over the last 37 years of doing this work just correlates with the principles that have been going on all the way from ancient Egypt and Rome and, you know, all these very ancient civilizations that have India also have correlated this. So this is not something that just came up with in somebody's garage last weekend, right? This is a long history. Okay, so let's talk about just the basic dimensions first. The earth plane that we have right now, each dimension has a sound to it and certain characteristics. Now, the sound of the earth plane or the physical plane or the plane of our five senses is thunder. And this is the illusion of reality, as we call this, the plane of space, time, matter, and energy. Now, the reason why thunder is relevant to the earth plane is that if you're using techniques like the CD, like my fifth-dimensional travel or any other technique to leave the body, you don't want to do it during a thunderstorm. Now, it's not dangerous. It's just that you're sort of like a salmon swimming upstream here. If the sound of the thunder is the earth plane and you're trying to leave the earth plane, you don't want to fight the resistances of the natural geophysical aspects of thunder. So don't do it during a thunderstorm. It's very simple. Now, the next dimension is the one that most people are familiar with, and we call this, or it's known as the astral plane. Astral is a medieval term that means starry, because people see the stars at night, etc., when they're on the astral plane. The astral plane is the second largest of all the dimensions. It's the dimensions of emotions. So when you're on that dimension, if you're angry or passionate or whatever your extreme emotions are, those are going to definitely affect your trip to the astral plane. The astral plane is divided into two different types of dimensions. One is the upper astral plane, which is a very positive experience. You can access your higher self, spirit, guides, departed loved ones, and you can do a whole bunch of fun things. Your thought creates a reality. So in all these dimensions other than the earth plane, you can actually think of like having blue breath, and you would have blue breath. You can teleport, you can fly, you can do all the things that you really can't do on the earth plane without the equipment or vehicles. The buildings are cathedral-like. They look like medieval or European, medieval museums and cathedrals that we see today. The roar of the sea is the characteristic sound. It's almost like a seashell being placed on your ear. And the upper astral plane has what we call the Museum of the Future. You can actually go to this museum, and it looks like a large museum, and you can see technology of the future. And this is how I discovered my superconscious mind tap technique and my idea of going into the future life progression. I developed these techniques by viewing that museum. I think Edison and Einstein and Tesla and Bill Gates and all these people that we consider to be scientists and even creative people like artists and musicians, etc., have actually visited that museum, have gotten their ideas. Now, the only other part of the astral plane that is a problem if you don't know what you're doing and you're not protected and don't know, you know, and think of negative thoughts or have a bad day, you can go to the lower astral plane, which is the source of all psychic attack. So people who have nightmares, for example, that's a remnant of going to the lower astral. The lower astral plane has very negative entities. It's got pixies and trolls and gargoyles. You ever notice how if you go to, like, go to New York City or go to Europe or any large building, you ever notice how the older buildings especially had these, like, monster figures on the edge of it, you know, these gargoyles, you know? That's a remnant of the lower astral plane. It's a plane where these entities who live there really don't like us, and they try to torture us. They can't really harm you. They can only create anxiety. But you don't want to go there. That's a bad trip. And people who don't know what they're doing tend to go there on a regular basis. Because when we go to sleep at night, all of our dreams, the REM cycle, the alpha brainwave, if you measure it neurologically, is really an out-of-body experience. Not only is it deep hypnosis, but it's an OBE, actually. That's been confirmed by UCLA and other research labs, dream laboratories. So that's the astral plane, second largest of the dimensions. Now, the next one beyond that is called the causal plane, and this is characterized by the tinkle of bells, almost like a New Age bookstore, okay? And the causal plane is the smallest of all dimensions, but it's a very important dimension because this is the actual, you might say, physical seat, so to speak, of the Akashic records. Mm-hmm. The Akashic records are like memories of all past, present, future, and even parallel lives. And they're stored on what we call fifth-dimensional computer chips. And this is the plane that, or dimension that a psychic would tap into if they're doing a reading and if they actually know what they're doing. Or you could, if you want to perceive a past life of yours or a future life or a parallel life or things like this, you're actually tapping into the Akashic records, which are technically stored on the causal plane, although you can access them in any dimension, including the earth plane. So that's really, you know, you don't have to be that dimension to actually do that. The next dimension beyond that is called the mental plane. And this is where the sound Om originates that the Indians, the Easterners, are always professing. The characteristic sound is running water. And this dimension is kind of fun because you have all the citizens look like little angels with white togas, you know. The highways are blue, so you know you're on the mental plane if you're driving on the freeway, and they do have roads. Their roads are created from their dirt, as ours are, except their dirt is iridescent blue. So if you see blue highways, you know the only dimension you can be on is the mental plane. Mm-hmm. The houses have abstract designs, so you look like you're in a geometric vortex when you're on that dimension. This is a dimension that's actually a very cool one. It's the source of all moral teachings, ethics, and philosophy. It's the home of the gods of most Orthodox religions. The masters would hang out there, so would Jesus or a Buddha or Mohammed or whatever, would actually hang out at that dimension, if at any of the other dimensions. That would be the most common one. And that's a relatively small dimension, too. Now, the next one is the largest of all the dimensions, and the one that's actually medically, and you can relate this too, the most significant for healing. And this is called the etheric plane. Mm-hmm. The etheric plane is characterized by the buzzing of bees as a sound. It's not an annoying one. It's a very low-keyed sound. Mm-hmm. It's the largest, again, of all the dimensions, and you can see stars 24 hours a day on this dimension. Now, what's important about this dimension, other than the size, is that there are certain residents of the dimension that we call etheric plane surgeons. Now, this is significant because every time you go to a dimension, you use a spiritual body to travel there. For example, we live in a physical body or our earth plane body. If you go to the astral plane, you would travel in your astral body. Now, if you go to the etheric plane, of course, you're going to enter into or use your etheric body. The reason why that's important is because the etheric body is the only spiritual body that's absolutely identical to the physical body in size and appearance. The other bodies are all different. The astral body is younger, taller, and thinner, so people like it. They think it's really cool, you know. But the etheric body is perfectly attuned to our physical body. Now, why that's important is because these etheric plane surgeons, which look like really weird creatures, they look like giant tadpoles, they do a kind of surgical procedure on you using light and other forms of energy and various sounds, and they can heal the etheric body. So if you have a technically incurable disease like cancer, AIDS, lupus, or you name it, then they can actually heal that etheric body. And because the etheric body is identical, in certain rare instances, this is not a given, but in certain instances, you can transfer the healing from the etheric body to the physical body, and you can heal. You can literally heal, quote, diseases or syndromes that are considered medically impossible. So the etheric etheric plane is a very, very important dimension.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I actually witnessed a couple of spontaneous remissions, and what they had in common is they felt an energy at the top of their crown that traveled as a wave through their body. Mm-hmm. And then after the wave was through, they had no more cancer, even though they had metastatic cancer in many locations. It's instantaneous with the travel of the wave, so it doesn't take a lot of time for the cancer to disappear.
Well, actually, the Rockefeller Institute, back even like 100 years ago, going to Lourdes in France, they had their physicians witness spontaneous healings of various forms of cancer that was, quote, medically impossible. I remember when I was in dental school, I was taking a physiology course, and the professor who was head of the department, PhD in physiology was his background, and he was trying to kind of relate to the dental students, trying to be cool, right? So he was talking about oral cancer, and he said, I'm going to give you an analogy for oral cancer that you guys can all relate to. He said, once you get the toothpaste out of the tube, you can't get it back in there, right? So, of course, me being the activist, not known for my universal popularity, but activism, I raised my hand and I said, Doctor, do you ever hear of Lourdes in France? And he said, yeah. And I said, so the toothpaste got back into the tube, right? They've got like 65 miracles they've documented since like the last 100 years. He said, yes, but you see, you have to understand something. It's medically impossible. And I said, just because it's not within your narrow-minded paradigm, it doesn't mean it's impossible. Obviously, mm-hmm. these cases occur. There are thousands of cases of spontaneous remission of various diseases. In my book, Soul Healing, I write about a case of cancer and AIDS that I treated. And I didn't heal the patient. The higher self did. That's perfect mm-hmm. energy. It's the God energy complex. Now, the next dimension, these five lower planes, we call these dimensions that we discussed, the etheric, the mental, the causal, the astral, and the physical, make up what is known as the karmic cycle. These dimensions, the soul is not perfect. You have to live out lives. You can live a life on the astral plane or the etheric mm-hmm. plane if you want. They do have their own bureaucracies and paradigms and things like that. And while the soul is perfecting itself, which is the ultimate goal of the soul, is ascension, these represent what we call the karmic cycle in the lower five planes. Now, at the end of a life of any of these dimensions, you go to a certain dimension that's called the soul plane. This is characterized by the single note of a flute, and this is where you will decide your next life with the advice of your masters and guides and your higher self, etc. Mm-hmm. And this is where you can make good decisions or you could make lousy decisions. And mm-hmm. because people, the average, my research shows that the average person has been around 1,000 times, that's not impressive. Having 1,000 past lives means that you're not getting it. That means that you go into summer school. Mm-hmm. I call this the DMZ because it's not really part of the lower five planes or the karmic cycle, but it's not part of the higher planes, which is the perfect part of the universe. So it's really an in-between level. It's like what I call, again, a DMZ. The beings that characterize or that permanently occupy this dimension are more like floating heads, so it's a very strange dimension. But it's one that's very significant because, again, that's where you will choose your next life from or where you can eventually ascend from. Now, you can't go into the higher planes until you're perfect, but on the soul plane, you can literally eavesdrop. You can put the proverbial, coffee can against the wall and get information from the higher planes. That's how we know about what we call the higher planes. And in my particular paradigm, I have seven of these higher planes that go all the way up to the 13th or God or nameless plane. Now, there are other philosophies that have different numbers. Who cares? The point is that there are higher planes versus the lower planes. In the higher planes, which eventually lead to the God or nameless plane, if you will, this is characterized by indescribable orchestra-like music as heard continuously representing the various sounds of the universe. There's no cause and effect. There's no body there. You are pure energy. It's just what we people would call heaven or nirvana.
Is that where the balls of light come from, the orbs?
Well, yeah, because remember, understand, the energy is the basis of the universe. Remember, like if you look at the Big Bang theory, which I happen to like that as a theory. I think that theory has stood up very well over the years. 13.8 mm-hmm. billion years ago, the universe was less the size of a pencil dot, and all of a sudden exploded mm-hmm. and inflation, everything we call this, that generated the universe. Okay, I don't know what happened before, 1 second before the Big Bang, or where the Big Bang actually occurred. If that was the universe, where was it located? That's always a problem. But ask Stephen Hawking and Kip Thorne about that. But the thing here is that what was created first? And this is an old thing. We know that E equals MC squared from Einstein and relativity. Well, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. So which came first, energy or matter? And the answer is very simple. It's energy. And geophysicists will tell you that by a factor of 500 million years. So the first thing that was created in our universe was energy. Light is a form of energy. So obviously, light, and, you know, let there be light. Think of it that way, okay? Obviously, the origin of all this has to be from the higher planes. Now, maybe the higher planes don't consist of light as we know it. It's a different kind of topography or physics, if you want to use that term. But basically, all energy originally comes from the God energy complex or the higher planes and then filters down through various procedures into what we call the lower five planes that we would see it. Because when you're seeing something on the Earth plane, this is like, you know, quadruple distillation. This is not the source of anything. This is just trickle-down economics here. So
right, yeah,
you know?
That's important to understand. Everything here is an effect, including all of the universe that we can see.
Right, and again, remember, your mind does create a reality on these dimensions, but there's an old philosophy. You know, there was a Chinese philosopher about the 5th century A.D., and he wrote, he was kind of famous in his country, and he wrote this little book or treatises, and he was saying that, he said, last night I had a dream that I was a butterfly. And then he said, how do I know that I'm not a butterfly dreaming I'm a human right now?
Right. Yeah.
You see, so we don't really know what reality is. There's not just a theory of relativity involved, quantum physics and, you know, all little things like string theory and the M theory. Mm-hmm. All this stuff shows that we really don't know. For example, how do you know and how does your audience know that this is the first day of their life and everything they have is a memory bank and a database? You don't know.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And you don't know whether we're living in a black hole right now. We're just creating an Earth that looks nice and peaceful because we don't want to go crazy. So basically, but this is where the multi-dimensions come in, the multiverse, as it's called, multi-universe. But so just don't take life that seriously. Do your thing, but just understand that if you follow a good moral ethical code and follow universal laws, you're going to be in good shape. If you try to take advantage of the universe, some people try to use these principles to manipulate other people. That is not a cool thing to do. The universe is perfect. It knows exactly what you're doing, and it's going to punish you if you try to play games. You may win for a while, for example. You may get material benefits or whatever, but eventually, in the long run, you're always going to lose if you tend to violate universal laws. Your motive is actually the most important thing, not the actual effects. You can mess up and do something. You know, it's like the difference between negligence and fraud. You know, there's a motive difference here.
Yeah.
You always want to have good motives and just trust in the universe because the universe will work to your benefit if you stay with it. And what we have is lessons that it's not punishment so much, unless you really do something stupid. It's really just lessons to learn to perfect the soul, because that's really the key here is perfection of the soul.
I think I told the story last time you were on, but it emphasizes the point well. When my mother had metastatic cancer, I didn't tell her some things because I knew it would upset her. But when she died, she went and told a good friend of mine who is clairvoyant exactly what was going on with me. So that is something that you can understand, that when you die, and, you know, she's in her astral body, she appeared younger. She already knew everything that I had kept from her. I kept it out of love. You know, I didn't want to upset her because she was, you know, she would have worried a great deal. I was going through some danger. But that isn't emphasizing that there are no secrets. I mean, once people pass into the astral and the mental planes, all secrets are out. So
but
you're really not going to keep anything from anybody.
Right. But more importantly, the idea of this out-of-body experience, this is the mechanism of reincarnation. So what this really does is eliminates the fear of death. If there's one advantage that people should really relate to, especially as they get older, when they get to be like in their 50s and 60s, thanatophobia is number one, which is the fear of death.
Right, it is.
And this is a way of showing that when you cross into spirit, yes, I do agree that the physical body is going to enter the nitrogen cycle and fertilize lawns. I have no problem with that, and to me, it's just like a used car. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the body, but realize it's not.
It wears out, you know?
Well, yeah, just like your car wears out. But
That's
the difference here is that your soul, however, this is the electromagnetic radiation, which is the energy of the soul. We have a lot of science to support it. Stanford University, among others, William Tiller's work and many others, Rupert Sheldrake, you name it. There's a whole bunch of colleagues in the field that work with this. And so basically that means that you're going to have lunch with Frank Sinatra. You know, I mean, it means mm-hmm. that there are entities that have also crossed into spirit, and you're going to be able to meet them and eventually go to the soul plane and work with your higher self, et cetera. But let me show you an example of how you mentioned about, like, people at the end of their life. Here's an example of I am an animal activist, and I have a miniature schnauzer named Karma, my little mm-hmm. child, okay? So I love dogs. So here's an example of a woman who came to me. She was referred to me by several of her friends, one, a couple of which were patients of mine. This is years ago. She had she was a single woman in her 30s, a professional woman, no significant relationship, never been married, and no children, but she had a dog. The dog was a beautiful St. Bernard that she called Bonzo, right? And so what happened, the dog got very old, and eventually the dog died. Now, she's in her mid-30s. When the dog died, she literally fell into major depression.
Mm-hmm.
And her friends were saying, you know, they were supportive of her, saying, you got to see someone about this. So she was, you know, they were putting on antidepressants, and they thought that she was suicidal. She really wasn't, but she was just very depressed. So she mm-hmm. came to my office, and she says, doctor, she goes, I don't really have a background or a belief in anything you do as far as the metaphysics, but she says, I am just very depressed, and I just got to get over this. And she was crying. She looked like a mess, you know, her face mm-hmm. was all, you know, whatever. So I said, okay, she told me the history, and I said, look, I have a suggestion. What I think would be the best for you is to meet Bonzo. Bonzo is, you might say, dead, crossed into spirit, if you want to use that term, but Bonzo is on the astral plane, and we can do an out-of-body experience, and you can meet Bonzo. She goes, I don't believe this, but, you know, whatever, let's do something. I can't take this. So we go into a various conditioning trances, and then all of a sudden, she's sitting in my recliner, and she has tears streaming down her face. And mm-hmm. she says to me, she goes, doctor, these are not tears of depression or mm-hmm. bereavement. I am with Bonzo right now.
Right, yeah.
Okay? So, she was reporting he's being very happy, being perfectly, mm-hmm. You know, his energy level, because he was a younger dog now, because
right.
always younger and thinner and, you know, on the astral plane. Okay, mm-hmm. so the case was resolved very nicely. There were things we did beyond this, and she was fine. So now the story doesn't end there. So now what happens, it's around Christmas time, and she goes to the local mall to do some Christmas shopping. Now, remember, she doesn't have a dog. And when she's in the mall, she says, you know something? I think I didn't lock my car door. She closed it but didn't lock mm-hmm. it. She was concerned that somebody might, you know, to go into the car and steal it.
Right.
So she leaves the mall, goes to the car. When she returns to the car, remember, it's around Christmas time, on the passenger seat, there is a German Shepherd puppy, about 2 months old. Okay. There's no sign. There's no letter. There's no note. Whatever. The door was
in the car.
Just the dog is sitting there, a little puppy, right? But it's a shepherd. It's not a Saint Bernard. So she figures, well, her friends probably wouldn't have done that because they would have gotten her Saint Bernard. So she doesn't
right.
know what to do, and she figures, I'm going to take this dog home, and then I'll decide, you know, take it to whatever, you know, try to get a home for it.
Right.
So she takes the dog home, and when she does that, the dog is exhibiting all the same qualities of Bonzo.
Right, yeah.
Favorite toy, the Dalai Lama test, you know, the mm-hmm. personality, even though it's a German Shepherd. So she decided to keep the German Shepherd, and she named it Squire,
mm-hmm.
and her life just was shall we say, positively increased because of it. So here's an example of reincarnation, of the fact that the soul is eternal, and how going through the fifth dimension literally saved her from age. I guarantee you, if she went to the typical psychiatrist, she would have been on every
mm-hmm.
antidepressant
yeah.
in the world. You know that, for a
right.
long time. And so my point is, here's an example of how life is eternal, because the soul is electromagnetic radiation, the most
mm-hmm.
common radiation. It's harmless radiation, like a TV signal going through the body is what the soul is. Her name was Fran, as I call her. Her case just illustrates the fact that there is no death. And by the way, you can have animals reincarnate. My Karma the third here is a reincarnation of Karma the second, because, again, mm-hmm. illustrates the same personality, the same favorite toys,
right.
the same characteristics. So you can actually get your pets back in a different body if you send out the appropriate energy to the universe. And this is following universal laws.
Yeah, one of my acquaintances, actually a secretary of a friend of mine, called me because she wanted me to do a clairvoyant reading because her cat got out, and the cat was a house cat. Got out, disappeared, and basically we said, well, you know, it's gone. It's no longer on the earth plane. It got eaten by something. And so a few months passed, and she saw me in the office, and she ran up to me and she says, oh, I have to tell you, this little kitten came up to our door And we took the kitten in, and the cat had all the same characteristics, knew the same places, you know, behaved in the same manner. And she says, I don't believe in reincarnation, but this is a reincarnation of my cat. So I think maybe the cats are educating her about reincarnation.
Well, like I say, never underestimate the power of children and animals to educate us. Okay.
No kidding. Isn't that wonderful? I mean,
it is wonderful, but isn't it? You see, the universe, you know, the problem is that most people are brainwashed by the media. The media is always negative, and I'm not referring to your show particularly. Yours is the exception. But, you know, TV news and newspapers and a lot of the Internet things, they just focus in on negativity, you know, like rape and pillaging film at 11. And so to me, is you want to keep away from that stuff because nobody grows by learning about all the negativities of things that don't affect them. That have,
energy
have,
follows thought, so you don't want
to. Well, yeah, right, sure, right, exactly. So here's some hints or some techniques as to how people can actually explore the fifth dimension on their own. And whether they're using CDs or other things, those are fine. They do work well. But there are certain things you want to do to establish an environment and a mindset to help you facilitate out-of-body experiences. Because the number one thing is fear. People are afraid that they're not going to return to the physical body or they're going to die. Throughout the 150-plus years, going all the way back to the British Psychical Society, there's never been a case of any harm with out-of-body experiences. Basically, it's natural. We dream for 3 hours a night. That's the REM cycle. Those are out-of-body experiences. You're out of the body 3 hours a night. Going through various REM cycles, three or four or five REM cycles, depending on how often you sleep or how many hours you sleep. So this is natural. So you're not going to get any physical, psychological, emotional, spiritual, or any kinds of negativities. If anything, it's going to be better because you're going to recharge your soul's energy, you're going to overcome the fear of death or any other kinds of differences, and you're going to access your higher self, which is the most valuable thing you could possibly do. So here are some hints here. First, warm weather favors the out-of-body experiences, or I call this astral voyaging. So you want to keep your room a few degrees above room temperature, let's say like 72 degrees rather than 70. As I mentioned before, you do not want to attempt astral voyaging or out-of-body travel during a thunderstorm because you're working against nature by doing that. You want to wear very loose clothing or nothing at all. So you don't want to wear tight suits or buckles or belts or tight shoes or anything like that. Just keep yourself kind of like loose and just relaxed. You want to make your initial attempts in complete darkness or in very, very dim lit rooms. You don't want to have any form of physical distractions. And that includes fragrances. Don't burn a bunch of incense and don't have fried chicken in the background. That's all going to distract you. You want to keep it as neutral as you can. You also want to make sure that there's dead silence in the room. Now, some people like to use metaphysical music, which, of course, are on my CDs, and that's okay, too. But you don't want to have distracting sounds or noise that's going to irritate you and keep you away from focusing. You want to practice alone. This is not a group experience. If you want to do out-of-body experiences, do it by yourself. You can control the environment, and you'll have a whole lot less distractions. Initially, it's better to time your trials late at night, right before you normally retire, because, again, your dream levels are all out-of-body experiences, but you can give yourself the suggestions and instruction to have waking experiences where you're going to remember the out-of-body trip rather than just zonk out and just wake up the following morning and have no memories. Now, the other thing is that you want to lie on your right side if you don't want to lie on your back, not your left side. We don't know why, but throughout all the ancient literature, the Egyptians, Osiris pictured in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, all this kind of stuff, they always say lie on your right side. So we don't know why, but just do it, folks. Believe me, there's a difference. The other thing that scares people, and they shouldn't, especially when you use like the techniques on my CDs, is the sleep paralysis, which is actually part of the sleep cycle. But you can avoid most of that during the waking day when you do these trials by using various spiritual protection techniques. The reason why sleep paralysis is part of our sleep cycle, I'm sure as you know, is because nature has designed us so that we actually get some sleep and rest. And if you paralyze the body temporarily, then you actually won't move, won't do the gross motor movements, and our body can recharge itself, replace the enzymes and hormones and millions of cells that are lost every day by friction and other reasons. But that scares people when they're doing out-of-body experience because it's a control issue. They think that, oh, my goodness, I've lost control. And in reality, you haven't. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as food is concerned and other preparations, you want to cut down on any kind of food intake or even fast prior to your out-of-body attempts so you don't have gurgling of the stomach or any other bodily functions, which are not cool. If you want to eat things, I would recommend fruits or vegetables, but avoid red meat. That's very important. Red meat takes 6 to 36 hours to digest, and it's not going to help you during an out-of-body trial. You want to refrain from eating any kind of nuts of any kind, especially peanuts, even though it's a member of the pea family, peanuts, but that will cause biological things that you don't want to deal with when you're trying to leave the body. Mm-hmm. Carrots, raw eggs, and liquids of all types actually can facilitate out-of-body experiences. What's very important is please absolutely refrain from any alcohol, tobacco, or any other kind of drugs. That is not going to help you. You are going to wind up on the lower astral plane if you go anywhere, and that is just not going to be a good trip, so you want to keep away from that. Now, when you're out of the body and you're exploring the fifth dimension, you're going to run into various entities. The question people have is they say, how do I know whether I'm running into a positive entity like a spirit guide or maybe your higher self or maybe a departed loved one who means you well, who can function as a spirit guide, or are you running into a lower astral entity, let's say you're on the lower astral plane, but don't really know where you are, because the lower astral plane doesn't really seem that different from the upper astral until you go into the corridors and meet some, you know, ET that looks like a reptilian or something like that, or a gargoyle, then you know you're in trouble. You're not in Kansas anymore.
Right.
Well, a high-level spirit, and I'll use the term high-level to apply to a spirit guide or a higher self or a departed loved one that may be a little bit spiritually more evolved than you that can function as a spirit guide, they will represent a sense of sincerity, simplicity, humility, and spirituality. In other words, they're always very positive. They will give you new information that will always benefit your life. They will accurately perceive not only future trends in your life, but how you will respond to them. They're excellent advisors. There's no difficulty in understanding the information they provide.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of the contact, and this is very critical, as a result of the contact with a high-level spirit guide, you'll be stimulated to be stronger, encourage others, initiate healing powers within yourself, etc. In other words, there's no stress or anxiety or negativity. That's the opposite that you'll experience with a lower spirit, a lower-level guide, so to speak, or a lower astral entity. Your psychic powers will increase. You'll be able to maybe even do telepathy or even teleportation techniques are possible, or what I call psychic empowerment. So basically, you're going to feel confident, empowered, never bored or frustrated or angry or compromised in any way. The opposite applies to a negative entity or what we call lower astral entity. They tend to, for example, expect you to accept its teachings blindly. They discourage questions. They're impatient. They use foul language. You may suddenly develop a medical or emotional problem as following that particular incident. These lower astral entities will flatter or patronize you, trying to win you over. You may become obsessed with material or personal gains. That's a real big thing with people, especially in economic downturns. You'll have bad luck, a series of bad luck in your life if you deal with these people or these entities. The communication will leave you uncomfortable. The inner voice may urge you to do destructive things to yourself or others. You could have nightmares. Negative statements are made in reference to God, to whatever your religion is, and advice to ignore all other spirit guide contact except that entity. So talk about the ego and
talk about the
mentality. These are examples of what a lower astral entity would do, the complete opposite of the higher level guide.
And you can, there is a nice trick that I learned in my spiritual development classes. You can ask that all higher level entities speak to you through one ear and all negative through another ear.
Yes, and actually what you can, that's very good. It's very, very, very nice. And what you could also do, too, is this is very interesting. You can also simply say, be gone, squirt, because they have to listen to you.
Yeah.
They cannot supersede the laws of karma here. So, for example, I had this, the proverbial little old lady from New England came to my office, and she was telling me how at about 3 o'clock in the morning, which is a bad time to have a negative experience, because that's the witching hour for the lower astrals, you know.
Right.
And the lower-level demonics, too. They love 3 a.m. Anyway, she would wake up at 3 a.m., and there would be a gargoyle at the foot of her bed. You can imagine, this is a woman who's about 70 years old, okay?
Uh-huh.
No, she's an elderly woman, and with, you know, her heart can only take so much, right?
Right.
And a very kindly woman, but, you know, very kind of, like, passive and this and that. And she says, and it's got green eyes, and he's staring at her, what do I do? And I said, all you have to do is move any part of your body, wiggle your toes or move a finger or wiggle your nose like Samantha from Bewitched, anything like that, and the entity will disappear. Because what's happening is she is actually on the lower astral plane,
right.
And that's a lower astral entity. And if you move any part of your body, you'll return to the physical body, and the entity will disappear.
Right. That's good advice.
She goes,
I like that.
Oh, yeah. She goes, is that simple? I said, just do it. So, of course, mm-hmm. the following night, she had the gargoyle come up, you know, 3 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning, the usual thing, and he's moving towards her, like he's like levitating towards her. And she just simply moves the pinky of her right hand, and all of a sudden, he just dematerialized, and she was back. she woke up at 3 a.m., of course, but she realized mm-hmm. he was on the earth plane, and the entity disappeared and never returned again because he realized he failed. Because, you see, when a lower astral attacks you psychically and they fail, they have to report that to their supervisors, mm-hmm. and they can read their minds so they can't lie and get away with it because all mm-hmm. communication is telepathic. And they get the crap kicked out of them, literally, mm-hmm. when that happens. So their incentive is only to work with people they can attack successfully. You see?
Right.
So spiritual protection techniques are really not difficult to do, and I always put them on all my CDs so people can, you know, they always have white light and other techniques to be protected, so we don't have to worry about that.
And it's kind of really amazing that all of these creatures that are in mythology and, you know, in all of our stories, and but cross-cultural, are actually cross-cultural because they're actually in the lower astral plane.
Wait, how do you think that people report, like the gargoyles or for example, some of the comic book characters, you know, Superman, Flash, Wonder Woman, all these characters
right.
that have these supernatural abilities, what these are the writers involved who created those, didn't really create them. They simply
mm-hmm.
went to the astral plane and perceived these entities and then took that entity experience back and just made a gazillion dollars writing comic books or movies mm-hmm. or whatever. That's what that represents. The same thing with the leprechauns of the Irish or the little fairy stories you hear about. Are they real? Yeah, they're real, but they're on a different dimension. So the
right.
question is, they don't simply go on CNN to do an interview, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they are real in their dimension. If you go to their dimension, oh, they're definitely real.
The
or
unicorns are real, too.
The what now?
Unicorns.
Oh, yeah. But again, these are fifth-dimensional experiences. Because,
mm-hmm.
see, our eyes can only see 3 dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't see into the fifth dimension unless you enter into a hypnotic or meditative state. Now,
right.
you are now able to use your astral eyes and ears, or what we call your fifth-dimensional
mm-hmm.
senses, not just the 5 senses, and then you can perceive them. So the point is, you know, society will mock these things, and they're welcome to their opinion. But in reality, the principles have been time tested for thousands of years, and I'll put that over the narrow-mindedness of of certain things. For example, I was just doing an interview earlier this week. Stephen Hawking came up with a brilliant concept. He says there's no reincarnation, there's no soul, science can explain everything. So I was interviewed by one of my buddies on National Radio, a network radio show, and I said, you know, it's very interesting. Science can explain anything. Well, Mr. Hawking, how about explaining the grand unified theory to me with science? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How come the theory of everything that Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life in Princeton, we still don't know it? The M theory is really cool. It combines the 5 string theories, but it's not the theory of everything. We
mm-hmm.
still can't relate quantum physics to the macro world that we live in. So science cannot explain everything, okay? Plus, Stephen Hawking's also lost the bet with Kip Thorne from Caltech in Pasadena about the existence of black holes. So he's not perfect, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was wrong about this. But again, that's a typical atheistic and scientific approach, so supposedly scientific approach, which really isn't science because science is supposed to be objective, supposed to evaluate the material without predetermined images or attitudes. And obviously, there's always agendas in the field of science, like there is in law and everything else, you know.
I think Stephen should read a book that I read in preparation for this lecture I gave last weekend on frequency medicine. That book is called The Universal One by Walter Russell. Actually, many of the answers are in that book.
Well, but see, the thing is, you have to understand, we're dealing with the 3-dimensional senses, and we're dealing with 5-dimensional principles.
If you only deal with 3 dimensions, there's no way that you can explain the unified field theory.
Right,
because
of course.
Everything here is an effect of a higher cause. So unless you include those higher dimensions, you can't get the real picture.
Not only that, it's impossible. Not only that, but they're also forgetting about, this is one thing that science, quote, to traditional scientists, remember, understand, scientists are not objective. There's no such thing as pure science. It's always applied science, and people
mm-hmm.
always have their agendas. Okay, here's the problem. In metaphysics, or in these principles that we're dealing with, this is a subjective issue, not an objective issue. So in other words, it's like a religious experience. You can't just put it into a lab and calibrate your equipment like you're doing a physics experiment. It doesn't work that way. It's subjective, and science can't stand subjectivity because they figure, well, we can't prove it. No, you can't prove any of this. All you can give is suggestive evidence. Even reincarnation cannot be proven, no matter how many great cases you have, because there are alternate hypotheses that are available, whether it's telepathy or whatever. Or you can say, well, how do you know that person wasn't exposed to that by some sort of kryptonesia effect? So there's all kinds of alternate hypotheses, and I understand that. But when you have mounting evidence that's like a the size of your Himalayas giving some of the evidence here, it's very, very highly suggestive. So the point is not to prove anything. It's to use this for growth in your own experiences and to better your own soul's mentality. But showing how you can use these principles of out-of-body experiences for actual healing, which I'm sure is of interest to you and your audience, because the healing energies originate at a spiritual level, they can work on any facets of a person's being. As I mentioned, the incurable diseases are not necessarily incurable. Unfortunately, the patient has to be motivated and willing to experience this. In other words, you can't just do distant healing by saying, well, so-and-so is suffering, so I think I'll send out some loving energy. You have to have their permission. And they also have to be motivated because, you know, about secondary gain, some people like being ill because they get attention from their family.
Right.
So you have to make sure that they're really truly motivated. The higher self directs the union of the patient and the out-of-body healing, so to speak, by way of energy. So the higher self has to be connected one way or another. They have to access their superconscious mind, or what we call the higher self. Illness is not really seen as a problem to be fought against. It's a condition of simply an imbalance of energies, just like the principles behind acupuncture and things like that from Chinese medicine and various forms of Eastern approaches. The purpose of illness is to bring something to our attention, not to punish us, but really it's an imbalance of energies, whether it be chakra balancing that needs to be done or other forms of energies that will help and facilitate healing. The out-of-body approach to healing cooperates with the body's own healing forces. It doesn't override them, it simply cooperates them, but of course the body has to still respond in its own way to the actual healing energies behind it, so things don't happen necessarily overnight. The out-of-body healing approach is completely natural, and every one of us has the ability to draw upon our own healing energy resource, which is mostly the higher self. So these are kinds of things that can help people understand anyone can do this, though, you know, if you're motivated and apply the right principles and access your higher self, you're going to be able to do literally just about anything.
Yeah, I think that many people are coming into this understanding, I think because they're remembering what occurs on the higher planes.
Well, I think there's also a consciousness shift. For example, if you a couple of my favorite people from times past was Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce.
Yeah, mine too.
If you look at Nostradamus, you know, about 500 of his 1,000 quatrains actually came true as far as being very accurate, okay? Mm-hmm. But one of them was, of course, he predicted a comet that was supposed to hit the Earth in 1999 and pretty much do what happened to the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. Now, that
would have occurred. That didn't happen.
Well, it did happen in a parallel universe, but not
but not in ours.
Okay, but the thing is that the reason why that didn't happen was not because he had, a bad hair day when he did that. His little tripod that he used didn't work real well. No, the reason was because we've gone through a consciousness shift since about the 70s, leading up to the so-called age of Aquarius.
Right.
The other thing is that Cayce, of course, was very accurate in many of his predictions, but he also said that by the year 2000, Florida, Georgia, Alabama are all going to be underwater, California's in the ocean, Japan is sunk, and all these little major geophysical events that, of course, didn't happen because, again, the consciousness shift occurred. So we are on a consciousness shift. Maybe the world is not really super positive every day, like we have terrorism, all these idiot things happening, and all the weather events. But the consciousness energy of the universe has shifted, or else we would really be in deep voodoo, as it's called. So there are things that are changing, which are affecting some of the old predictions. And this is actually good news, because as you move towards a consciousness shift, you really want to do that. That's how you improve, go from one, the Piscean age to the Aquarian age, etc. You want to have consciousness shifts, because you sure don't want to repeat the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the wiping out of the Earth can also be delayed. You know, it can be delayed until after an ascension event or something like that.
But wasn't it supposed to occur today? Isn't today supposed to be the
today's
assumption?
Supposed to be the end of the earth, according to some prophets. But,
I know. He said that, I was watching Bill Maher yesterday last night, and he said that, he said, according to the devout Christians, he says, all the Christians that are going to heaven are going to leave on May 21st. So he said, that's a win-win.
Mm-hmm. That's a win-win. Well, we asked in meditation last night if today was the end of the earth, and they said for some it will be.
I know, but you know, how many times do we need to go into the history of people predicting the end of the earth? You know,
yeah, really.
It's a long history, and it's always failed. And it's amazing how gullible people can be, though. I mean, you know, I'm not telling people to give up their theological beliefs. But come on, folks, let's get with the program here, okay? I mean, there are certain things that just ain't going to happen, and I don't care how many people write about it. First of all, it's an interpretation. This isn't something that's etched in stone anyway. This is somebody just like, who was the 18th century theological dude who computed the beginning of the earth according to the Old Testament at 4004 B.C.?
I don't know his name, but I know that.
You know what I mean? And it was like, first of all, it was Sunday night. At 9 p.m. How he got that, I'd like to see his calculator for that. But then he changed it, and he said, no, it had to be Monday morning at 9 a.m. Yeah, I guess because you can't start on a Sunday because it's the day of rest.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you kind of like, you have to laugh about. But people take it seriously. I mean, you know, it's unfortunate. But some of the things about just the your average listener out there, to show you they have actual remnants of their out-of-body travels at night, when you have dreams of flying, and everybody has dreams of flying, okay? I don't care who you are. I don't care what your ethnic background is or what country you live in. Everybody have dreams of flying, and this is simply you're leaving the body when you go from the earth plane to the astral plane during your first REM cycle. And basically, that's so everybody has those dreams. Now, there's also the dreams of falling. You notice how you never splat? You know, you fall like you're falling through an abyss, a cliff or something, and all of a sudden you wake up. What that represents is the return of the astral body going back to reuniting with the physical body during the hypnopompic states, so when you wake up in the morning. So these are examples. Everybody has it. Every culture reports it. And, you know, like this is like Watley's Law of Evidence. You know, if people from all over the world with no communication say the same thing, it must be true, you know. This is natural. The idea of when people do leave the body, they can experience a dual consciousness, which means that you can be aware of the physical plane through your physical body at certain moments, and then at the other moments, your consciousness will shift to the astral plane. So you're going to have this, like, duality, which confuses people at first, but really you get used to it, and you can then control it. When you're out of the body, colors are perceived much more vividly as are objects. You see them very, very clearly. The difference is you can't see fine writing details. You wouldn't want to read a real estate contract when you're out of the body, okay?
Right.
You can't see those details. Scenes of unexplainable beauty are noted, especially on the upper astral plane. And all these dimensions are really positive, except for the lower astral and the earth plane. Every one of these are really cool and really fun to be on. You can sometimes feel these tuggings at the back of the head when your out-of-body experience is too long in duration, and this will precede a return to the physical body because now it's like your time's up. Or if you sense any kind of fear for any reason or a loud noise in the physical environment where you're practicing your technique, that will pretty much instantaneously get you right back into the physical body in the earth plane. And you travel the speed of light, so everything really is instantaneous. Remember, the astral world is different. If you're in your bedroom or, let's say, wherever you do your experiences, you have what we call a reality test. Your astral world that you create is very similar, maybe 95% accurate as to the physical world that you are in, that you just left. But there are certain differences that you can tell. We call this reality testing to tell when you're actually out of the body because you've created an astral bedroom rather than the earth plane bedroom. Maybe the wallpaper is a little different, or your alarm clock looks a little weird, or something is going to be, some minor detail is going to be imperfect, and that's how you can tell whether you're actually out of the body. And there's also things called, that we call this false awakenings, where you dream that you're waking up, and in reality, you're waking up on the astral plane, but you're still asleep and still in the REM cycle.
I have dreams that I'm having dreams.
Yeah, right. This is like looking in a mirror, you know. But those are what you call false awakenings, where you're still out of the body, you're just dreaming or experiencing the out-of-body experience of waking up from a dream on the astral plane, not on
mm-hmm.
the earth plane itself.
Right.
So, and don't forget, there's also the ancient, and this is also part of the Old Testament too, reports of the pulsating silver cord that connects mm-hmm. the astral body to the physical body. And this cord appears to become thinner as the distance between the two bodies increases. And what the silver cord represents, it's like an umbilical cord that connects you to your higher self. Mm-hmm. So the pulsation is really energy coming from the higher self, which will help not only revitalize your physical body indirectly mm-hmm. and your astral body, but also information and other kinds of spiritual advice are coming through that particular silver cord. So that silver cord is important. It's only severed when the person clinically dies. So as long as you
right.
have a silver cord, you're going to come back, is how that works.
I have a question about a tone that many of us hear.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Irvin Laszlo, and he was a child prodigy musician. I didn't know if you knew that, but he says that it's very common, and this note is G. But it's a tone that is intermittent at first, but now most of the people I associate with in the spiritual, well, in the metaphysical world, hear it all the time. And it gets, I had some experiences where a huge amount of energy came out of my hand that was healing energy. And during that thing, I mean, you would have been able to feel this energy across the room. It was a,
mm-hmm.
some I'd never had before.
Well, remember, the idea of sound.
And then that noise got really, really intense, like a train. I mean, it was like
the
really
idea
loud.
Of sounds, the idea of sounds and even colors are characteristic of interdimensional travel. So if you're hearing a certain sound, whether it be a G or whatever
I hear
sound
it all
is,
the time.
Well, you also have to separate that from the HARP project, too, and other kinds of physical things.
No, I don't think, but regular people don't hear this, so I don't think it's HARP.
Oh, okay. Well, like I say, the any time when people do leave the body and do interdimensional, they will
uh-huh.
experience different sounds and sometimes colors, too, which are characteristic of each dimension. So the sound would simply symbolize that you're actually doing some interdimensional or receiving information from the fifth dimension, and that's sort of like your little hint that you're getting it. And obviously, you're more psychically evolved yourself. You're going to get that more often than anybody else is going to get if people
well,
receive that at all.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's happened over the last few years. I mean, of course, I hear constantly rather than just when I concentrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But then now, for the last few weeks, when I think something, it happens, which is really weird. You know?
Well, what you're doing is you're getting up. This is a precognitive situation you're getting now, you see. And that's part of your psychic development. You're
yeah.
getting like a deja vu kind of thing, but in reality, it's a precognitive experience. So
mm-hmm.
you're able to get something instantaneously that's going to occur very shortly, and that would be simply part of your own psychic growth, which is an example of your own natural psychic abilities. You mentioned about some of the readings you've done and some of the expansion of your own psychic awareness.
Yeah, it's just that I think this is what's coming for everybody.
Well, no,
so
I agree. It's a
matter
of everybody.
I think that we have to be careful about what we project.
Well, yeah, I know, but this is why I always advise my patients and people I know when I do interviews and stuff
mm-hmm.
is that keep away from negativity. You do
right.
not grow. You do not benefit. The only people who benefit by negativity are people who sell ads on TV stations and news.
Right.
Basically, people are just angry and depressed. That's what negativity
mm-hmm.
does. It does not generate any kind of healing. It does not make you, you know, who cares what happens in Biafra or somebody gets some warlord kills somebody in Africa. That is not your issue. Unless you have
mm-hmm.
relatives there, you know, why should you have to learn all these stupid little picayune facts, all of which are negative, and that's what the conventional media does
mm-hmm.
with it. They deal with negativity. It's almost like a Wall Street banker. All they deal with is like, well, I'm just trying to protect you against the worst case scenario, you know?
Yeah.
And like a lawyer, you know? I mean, so to me is that, think you want to be positive. The energy you send out is the energy
mm-hmm.
you get. This is the law of attraction. It's a major universal law. So if you deal with positivity,
right.
yes, there are still negative things that are going to happen in the world,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to have a lot better percentage of being able to deal with it and being able to experience your own positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And if your thought is actually creating a reality, which we know from quantum physics is mathematically demonstrable,
mm-hmm.
then why not think of positive things rather than the usual
right.
negative junk and then create more positivity in your life? And you can use this to meet soulmates. You can use this for abundance.
Mm-hmm.
You can use this for healing. There's all kinds of things, advantages.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing to lose. The worst that can happen is nothing happens. Okay, so everything's the same.
Right.
Yeah, there's no downer here, you know. Mm-hmm. There's only the up phase here. So, again, just to repeat what I said earlier, a reference for your audience, if they want to actually experience the fifth dimension and they order my book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, from my website, then I will send them a free CD titled Fifth Dimension Travel, which will actually use self-hypnosis. It's a hypnotic self-hypnosis CD, which will guide them out of the body and into the fifth dimension, and they can explore parallel universes, the past, the future. They can access their higher self. There's all kinds of fun things they can do, that, as we discussed this morning, to be able to relate to the universe and to better and grow themselves. And each of them includes spiritual protection techniques and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of fun things that can be done. And the website is DR, that's D as in David, R as in Robert, and BRUCE. GOLDBERG.com. And if they want to call it in, they can call it into my 1-800 Karma for You, which is 1-800-527-6248 number. So that would be the number if they want to use the non-computer aspect of doing it. So these things are just something that I want people to read about it, but I also want them to experience it. I want
them
to encourage what I call psychic empowerment.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much. We're coming up to the end of our hour. I really appreciate you joining us on short notice. It was a great interview, and I wanted to let people know that next week we're interviewing Chris Carter on Science and the Near-Death Experience, and then Joyce Kovelman, Once Upon a Soul, and Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, for the next few weeks. We have Noetic Science, the third Thursday every week. Lee Culver will be back with us talking about remote viewing and other topics, including Bigfoot, next month. And we hope that you all are able to join us next week for Temple of Health Radio Show. Thank you very much.